There is no phone ringing, dammit!
What the hell are you talking about? Do you know what the hell she's talking about?
Now what in hell am I going to tell this boy Shaver's parents? That a substitute nurse assassinated him because she couldn't tell the doctors from the patients on the floor? My God!
Okay, you let a woman beat ya! You little tiny nothing!
Why did you move closer to me?
Don't, Bob.
His name was Jeremiah Johnson.
Norma Ray has been working since she was 16.
Jeff Goldblum is the psycho freak who's everywhere the action is.
That's outrageous!
You try one more goddamn stunt and I'll light up the fucking sky!
I'd rather die running than be left here alone.
Okay, but remember, serpentine!
Absolutely.
What a guy.
Who can fuck the lilies and the roses too?
A decade under the influence. No rules, no limits. No wonder these filmmakers changed our world.
Ooh. Well, hello and welcome.
You interrupted our meth-making conversation. I thought it was Chore Boy. They won't allow you to buy Chore Boy.
Why wouldn't they allow you to buy Chore Boy? It's just a fucking scrubber.
Yeah, I know, but they started having it behind the counter and shit.
That's just because people stole it.
Because they're using it to make meth.
No, because they're using it as like a filter thing for smoking drugs.
Oh, for smoking meth, not making meth?
Yeah. You put it in your pipe and you smoke it. That way you don't get that hot fucking meth in your lungs.
Oh.
You just get to smoke that sweet, sweet smoke.
Sorry, private conversation on the side. You know, we're not just amazing 70s podcaster. We're also meth enthusiasts.
We're also social workers who work with people who
you two are
experiencing addiction.
I work with people who experience addiction.
As well.
And every month on certain dates, it's all really poor and struggling people playing the video lottery. And I'm like, why? It's because that's the day that they get their SSI checks.
Yep.
And it's all pretty sad sometimes. I haven't seen them for a while. So, like, post-COVID, it wasn't as, like, ominous as it used to be.
So, oh, really?
Yeah. It used to be like it would just be packed.
Folks broke the cycle.
Maybe.
Hopefully people got into housing, since there was a bunch of housing specifically built for folks who are on SSI to be able to afford and access.
Well, let's hope.
Victory,
so.
I was trying to find this actor that I wrote about, one of the actors in this movie, and I can't find him. That was in one episode of Blue Bloods, because we were talking about Blue Bloods the other day. But you know who was in Blue Bloods, Victory?
I don't. I mean,
Your sister.
Your sister
did an episode of Blue Bloods, just like the guy in this movie. One episode.
I could have guessed, and also she never told me.
But yeah, I mean, it's work. I would take the Blue Bloods fucking.
Yeah. Yeah.
Check when we watched that movie, Disclosure.
Mm-hmm.
The woman, kept playing prostitutes that got killed.
Yeah,
it was like dead hookers, and then she was like, "Oh, you know, talking about bad representation and stuff."
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if you remember this, but when we were last in LA, we were having a conversation, specifically about like those jobs, because a lot of good directors and actors will do lots of episodes of things like CIS or whatever that
Blue
is.
Bloods.
Yeah, just these fucking stupid cop dramas, because they're consistent money, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And for like a long time, that was the only non-reality TV.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they were just making so much money exploiting people on reality TV shows, paying them peanuts.
Yeah.
And those were, like, some of the only, like, written, scripted, and acted shows.
And we're coming back to that.
Oh, God.
Coming back to that with the, I mean, fucking writer's strike. I hope it breaks them.
I was talking about it, and then I was like, this, people in my Star Trek podcast community, it's a community that helped with COVID, where we do Discord meetings every week and talk about Star Trek episodes. And one of them, he's loosely affiliated with the show The Orville. And he was like talking about the writer's strike. And he was like, oh, yeah, you know, and it said to not get done till October. And I was kind of like, where did you get that information? And again, he explained how he got the information. And I can't regurgitate it to you, but he was saying it's going to be devastating for the fall lineup if they don't have new shows. And then he said a lot of people have put out their fall lineup, and it's all reality TV shows.
Yeah, there's a ton of that shit coming out right now.
Yeah, so do not watch that shit. Like, those people are not paid. Right, that makes you half
scab.
Yeah, they are literally scab labor, and they are not paid very well, if at all. It's extremely exploitative. People are, you know, they don't have any of the protections of the union for their work days or anything. And yeah, it's just filling up, like, you know, airspace that should be going to writers.
Which is a really cool thing that was covered in the fucking American Gladiators documentary that you should definitely watch.
We'll watch it. Today we're doing a wrap-up of The Big Fix.
No, but I want to go down to this other...
We can do that later. No, we're not there. 1978.
I'm joking.
And again, we have director Jeremy Kagan, and this is the last of his trilogy about 60s stuff. We did... we're going to do Catherine, and we did Heroes, and we did Big Fix, but we also just watched Scott Joplin. So this is a director that I think I really like. So what'd you think of this film?
This is a fun film. I mean, it's just, it's interesting. It's done, it's written witty. There's lots of different, I mean, I want to preface this with, I don't particularly love the gumshoe fucking,
I don't either. I hate it, but it's like, if they found a way to make it interesting, then that's okay.
It's true.
I don't let a genre dictate, and I used to do that. Because I was like, oh, I hate Westerns. But now I've seen some Westerns that I really like.
Yeah.
And I would never... Sorry, excuse me. I would never go towards a detective movie. But if a film's good, a film's good.
Well, and this doesn't... I mean, while this has some of the tropes of a detective movie, a lot of it's like interpersonal stuff that's done really well. It's interesting. It harkens to a lot of real life events. While they don't like parallel this movie, you know, it takes real characters and you know, puts them in these positions, you know, these made up positions.
Well, he has to make a living, and he was able to not compromise his ideals as much because he was in law school, right. And he quit law school, and she was mad.
Yep.
But he couldn't justify becoming a lawyer. Well, you can be a radical lawyer, but whatever, it didn't work for him.
You can, but it's hard, right? There's some it's barriers there.
It's difficult to make money that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he's not making a lot of money as a private investor.
Yeah, but he probably doesn't have like $200,000 worth of debt either.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. There's that.
I don't know. And also, this was 1978. But.
Yeah, no, I know.
That's true. 75% of their tuition would have been covered before they ever saw the bill. In the 70s.
Fucking boomers, man.
It just seems like...
Yeah, their fucking education handed to them practically for free and then fucking pulled up the ladders behind them.
Yeah.
Cool move, boomers. Cool move.
It just seems like, you were saying, just a vehicle to get these different things on the tape.
Totally.
We have to have a movie that's about something. Even though, you know, Heroes was specifically about Vietnam vets coming back, and the first movie to deal with, you know, post-traumatic stress syndrome. And so he could have just had it where he was just dealing with, you know, his past. But then you want to get the underground character.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. You could have just done it about Abbie Hoffman being underground or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I think... it's possible that this could have been a more interesting movie for me personally if it wasn't couched in a, like,
correct
whodunit kind of thing or whatever. But I did appreciate the social commentary and, like, following. Like, I like movies about that in general. Like, you know, what happens to the people after, you know, like, the high watermark happens, and then you've still, like, you're not one of the ones who ended up dead or in prison or exiled. Like, or even if you were exiled, like, what then? Like, what happened? You know, like, you still have a whole ass life ahead of you, and I think that part of the story is interesting too, and it also gets away from that, like, youth centrism.
Yeah.
Just super important.
And like, and older revolutionaries find other ways. And like, I think it's interesting to explore like, why? Like, what makes you leave the work? Or, you know, what makes you transform the work? And like, there's just a lot of things to explore there. So I think that was interesting to me about this movie.
It's also really nice for a change, because usually these movies that are done like this on a, you know, detective or whatever, the background of the individual is also boring. Like, they're like cops who got injured and can no longer do the work, or mm-hmm. you know, it's something like that where you're like, well, I didn't like you to begin with, and right. But here we have like a really likable, relatable character that's taking his activism and the skills that he built as an activist and rolling them into this other kind of job where he can sort of live the life that he's been used to, the weird hours that he likes to be up and active, have the social relationships that he enjoys,
smoke pot yeah. and play Clue by himself.
Yeah.
I also like that he sort of bucks the trope and is like a pretty responsible dad.
Yeah.
Like, usually those guys are like alcoholics, deadbeat dad, kind of a misogynist, but like in a sort of charming, lovable lump kind of way. It's like, I'm glad that they didn't do that
yeah,
with this character.
Totally.
That they did make him a likable person.
And so likable, in fact, that the second he shows up at Howard Eppes's and they like have 1 inch of like, oh, what are your intentions here? Oh, they're honorable? Cool. Let's hang out.
Yeah, let's get drunk. I mean, it's a scene transition.
Uh-huh.
Suddenly, they're just grilling. He's grilling, and he's just, they're drinking lots of beers, and they're reminiscing. Yeah, yeah. Those scenes are brilliant. And
they
again,
are.
We talked about this, we were watching how they instantly take it seriously.
Mm-hmm.
When they're like, who's fucking, hold on, whose car is that?
Right. Because
he is still underground, and it's... It's all interesting, all the stuff that they get on the tape, and I love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, anybody who's done activism for, like, a fucking second, like, that, you get that. Like, that is super relatable.
It's time to switch gears.
Yeah. Fun's over.
Everyone's okay. They flipped over the bed.
Mm-hmm. Made their little barricade. Yeah. I was disappointed. I mean, I know it's the story and where it's going, but that his love interest Shay gets killed so quickly in the movie. She's a really interesting character and a pretty phenomenal foil for him early on. It really builds his character so quickly because
yeah,
she's so interesting. It was just a little sad to see that character not
yeah.
get more playtime before
about 40 minutes in and she's gone.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I agree with you 100%. I was, you when you started saying that, I was like, yeah, you know, and it's one of the women characters, and we need those perspectives. But one of my favorite characters is his aunt, and you talk about
mm-hmm.
getting things on the tape that can, like, spark your interest, which was what it was like when I first saw this movie, and I didn't know about a lot of the things that the yippies and some activists back then had done and how they were using humor and whatnot and stuff. And so it's neat that it's on the tape, but also his aunt is mentioning, you know, anarchists and shit. It's just, he's radical, but his aunt was more radical than him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And so that was bad ass.
Like, legit early, yeah.
And the Vasquez people, it's just like, they were so super action. And
yeah. Just show up and be like,
a lot.
We got you.
And I mean, I think that's like the whole movie. You have this detective thing, but it's really getting a lot of things on tape that weren't allowed so much on the tape. And then soon were allowed even less.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's talking about it. He was like, people got bored. And then he was saying it was really easy to go underground in the beginning. We were rock stars. But then these happens. I used to have a lot of those conversations with someone who was involved in that, which was Stu Albert, where it was like, he didn't want me to completely blame COINTELPRO for everything. And I was like, yeah, but they would take the issues that you had with other groups or whatever, and they would intensify them. but these issues did exist. It's like some of the things that, that they did and life struggles they had, you know, growing up or whatever, you know, or as time changed and people were less interested in it. But it's like very easy to see how the FBI COINTELPRO and then also, you know, how the media completely changed. That was like I was saying when we were watching, it was one of the biggest things is how they took the momentum back towards the people and they got all of this media attention and that, that the backlash was, we're not going to give it to you anymore.
Right.
And yeah. So there wasn't
light. We're going to buy up all the media and we're gonna, not going to allow you any access to it. We're going to completely protect our fortunes. They and like they'll let, yeah, like a right wing, like if you're economically right wing, but maybe socially kind of liberal, like you can get access to the media, but otherwise, fuck off.
Mm-hmm. They used to call the media, and the media would show, and they were interested in that kind of stuff. It happened very much so at Attica. And then, you know, the Governor Rockefeller and then Nixon-sanctioned Rockefeller, you know, they sent out these communiques that they were killing the hostages. And then that was the excuse for the state troopers to go in there and kill a bunch of unarmed people and shoot 150 people and kill 44. And then the media was so pissed that the information that they got was lies. And there was all this stuff about it. And it was, like, huge. And none of that would happen today.
Nope.
Where they were like...
Yeah.
They would super, get caught.
Moreover, things like that happen all the time, and like you know, only if you're following like prison abolition movements and stuff like that, like you might get some, you know, news or press releases or whatever from people involved with those things. But it's definitely not making the mainstream news.
Yeah, we have a lot of alternative media now, but I mean, there's a lot of people. You know, my boss still loves to put on mainstream media, and it's just like, this is just, you're not getting anything. So I'll put on PBS on his YouTube, and he won't even notice. And I was like, at least just watch the PBS news. That's still so much better. But Stu Albert was explaining, you know, because he was alive back then and was an activist back then, how the news people were screaming at the police or that the people that had given them those reports, just screaming that they had been given, you know, false information when now they wouldn't even just give a shit.
Well, it's I think it's worse than and that. It was hard to believe because I think they might give a shit, but they've like the media system has torn out all of the, their version of extra in that. Right. So there's nobody there to, I mean, there's no time for you to fact check. There's no, and if you get caught lying, who cares? Because we can't come back to it. And these stories, I mean, most police departments now have people to write stories. That's all they do for the police, right?
Yeah.
They just do the media control, and they will submit stories to the different news channels and be like, "Here's your story."
Yeah.
And they'll just do it. I mean, they'll just read it verbatim on fucking air. I mean, when I worked at Goodwill, we did that for news stories all the time. We had a, you know, in our marketing department, we'd write stories for the media about how, you know, we'd done some fantastic thing and you should give us money or your stuff or whatever. And they would just read it verbatim like it was a fucking news story. And it's like, this is an ad. Are you kidding me?
We started seeing that in the 80s and, a guy I follow, you know, Jello Biafra, he was, I was talking about this movie, The Media Monopoly by Ben Bagdikian, that talks about, you know.
Bagdikian?
I think it's Bagdikian or Bagdikian, you know, and he kept doing revisions of the book. He was saying it was like 15 companies and now 5 companies or 3 companies where all of the media is just in one. He also said that he was on a plane once in the 80s and it was like an advertisement for a plane. And everyone was taking it as news, but it was just an advertisement for a Boeing 77 disguised as news.
It's
everything has completely changed. Now we do have the internet, so you do have, you can have access to things, but you don't know.
But it's much also
more difficult
work
to fact check, right?
Mm-hmm.
I heard what they said. I didn't hear what you said.
Oh, I just said it's fucking work. I mean, exactly saying what they're saying is okay. That, like, there is so much information there that, like, finding what's real is maybe harder than
And legally they can lie to you, right? Like, that's...
Yeah.
Like, a major deregulation of the media is, like, not only are they allowed to monopolize, but they're allowed to lie to you. Like, I mean, Fox has been busted disseminating lies in other countries where that's not legal many, many times, but in this country it is legal, so...
Kind of. I mean, they just did... Well, I guess they settled. They didn't lose the case, but they were going to lose the Diebold case.
Hmm.
But that's a lawsuit. That's not a criminal...
Well, that's true.
...offense, right?
I mean, it's... Yeah. They're still breaking a law.
Like, they're not going to lose their permits and stuff to be able to broadcast on, American airwaves. Like, there's not going to be any sort of criminal consequences for that.
Right. Didn't get a really strong media perspective in this movie, which I thought was kind of interesting, because it's definitely one of the levers that all these things would work around.
I mean, he mentions it, I think. Howard
Eppes mentions it. Might have been early for that. Mm. Like, for the media component to be entirely influential.
78, though, they would have noticed it. I mean, Network came out before that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I think they were aware of it. I don't know why it wasn't put in the film, because it seems like almost everything else was chucked into this film. I was saying, when doing research for it, there's no commentary on this. There's not a lot of information about this. And there was some real serious misinformation about Abbie Hoffman on Wikipedia. And I was like, I want to put some correct information on it. I've read all of his books, and he documented his life pretty well. So it was always like, when someone's saying something, it was like, well, he wrote about that. Why can't you put his perspective in there? And it's not. And it would be nice. I mean, I was shocked at how much misinformation and just pretty much stuff that they got from someone's FBI COINTELPRO profile, that they were using as misinformation to, get rid of his power in the community, because they didn't like it.
Yeah.
And that's just almost verbatim what you're going to read on Wikipedia. And that's kind of sad.
Yeah, no, that sucks.
Or just focusing, like, on alcoholism or something. When it was like, well, what about, what they were talking about in Heroes, where it's like, that's, people are super depressed. And why are they depressed? That's not the only thing that you should be focusing on.
And well, and the people point to that like it's a personal fault. Failure all the time, which is, not to go down another path too far, but that understanding of addiction is just bullshit.
That's true.
I mean, there's rich kids who are addicted to fucking, party drugs or something, I guess, but like, I don't think that's who they're ever talking about when they're like, oh, addiction, no. Blah, blah, blah. No, it's fucking people who've lived real lives dealing with real shit who are having problems.
It's just to be dismissive. They'll do that. It's gotten a little bit better, but it used to be if you looked up Huey Newton, you'd just be like, oh, he was a crack addict and he was addicted to crack and he sucked. And it was like, he was doing coke to self-medicate, but he also got his doctorate while doing the coke.
Right.
Very intelligent person, the same doctorate, he has this doctorate just like Martin Luther King. And it's like, if you look at someone's FBI files, I've talked about this before, if you have a speeding ticket, you're a little bit worried about it. But imagine, they're trying to kill you in all these different ways, and there's, whatever. A Bible-sized book with FBI things about how they're trying to destroy.
Yeah.
Also, rich people just have the luxury of making all the consequences of doing coke go away. So
that's
we
true.
Don't really
George Bush.
Yeah.
Like, exactly.
Totally. Become the fucking president. Also, it is so disingenuous and terrible to be like, oh, Huey Newton, fucking crack addict, without also being like, and the US government absolutely
pushed crack into not only to him, but the entire fucking South Central black community and at that time and flooding, you know, well, the entire country.
With very, very cheap cocaine.
Yeah. So, you know, shut up.
It was just... is alarming to see that still on Wikipedia when I really thought I wasn't going to see it, or at least I would see both. But it's pretty sad.
Yeah.
But again, back to this movie, I like this movie a lot. And we do still have Catherine to showcase, and that'll kind of be nice. Art Carney's in that one.
Yeah, I like Catherine. It's really, but that's I haven't
what
seen I, it in a really
that's
long
what
time
I wanted either. To say. I mean, you can all say whatever else you want to say, but I wanted to say, how would you compare it with the other films of his that we've watched? And even though, because we recently watched Scott Joplin, our review is coming, but to maybe to give a little bit of a teaser, because it's not really about politics, but it is. It's spawn. I still
super.
I still have some things on my phone that I need to look up, that articles that we talked about when we were watching that movie. One was the Tuskegee thing that you were talking about.
Yeah.
I think the thing that...
The syphilis study. I think that's mentioned in the movie or something about it that led us to it.
Yeah, I...
Got to turn back around and talk.
I don't think they would have because it
the conversation came out of that movie.
I think it might have been... Oh, but no, but they do go into the future a bit. So maybe they did get to the... to the time period where
I don't remember them mentioning
the experiment happened,
but I definitely remember that was a conversation that was bred out of that.
Yeah,
from a cinematic perspective, I think this movie is maybe the most complex of his that we've watched. It's like lots of different characters, sets,
heroes too.
I mean, yeah, but
it feels so good to get out of there. Come on, Sally Field.
No, but that movie...
That Blu-ray looked better, by the way.
That movie has got, like, a lot of tight characters that they're creating. This one's much bigger. Mm-hmm. Like, you were saying, like, oh, this is one of those films that captures the city as a character.
Yes.
And I agree.
Super
and it's
LA.
Shot everywhere.
In a generation as well, not just a place.
But... Yeah, totally. And I think this movie ends up feeling a lot more complex than the other ones, not because the story's so much more complex or better, but there's just a lot more. There are other pieces that feel bigger, and there's with the other ones, I feel like they're a little bit more like a smaller pool of relationships and interlocking things. It also probably has to do with this being a detective film, that they're trying to give you some, like, you know. Oh, and then, you know, this comes and it's an exciting twist and, you know, this and this and this, versus the other films, which are much more like, you know, we're giving you the information, or we're giving you a history of this person and the things that they've done, or the specific event. I don't know. It's kind of where I landed.
Yeah. We can rate this if you want, if you don't have anything else to say.
I don't know that I do. Victor, did you have...
I'm ready to get a third plate of food.
Just one final thought. I also liked that he addressed the issues of privilege and that played a part in movements losing momentum. Like the fact that a lot of the folks who had positioned themselves as leaders didn't really need a revolution and could feasibly, you know, live out the rest of their lives just sort of sitting back on their laurels. And I think that is, like, that's an important point to think about, you know, when thinking about, like, who our movements lifting up as leaders, who, you know, who are we listening to, who are we giving power to in community organizing, right? Like, you know, are we doing the hard work of lifting up the folks who need it the most. And, you know, because if we don't, when those young people are, you know, burnt out and they have the resources to leave the movement, what happens?
Right.
And, you know, if there's no people who are, who have no other choice, who are, you know, built up with resources and skills and things, like, what happens to that community that's been radicalized and then abandoned?
Well said.
I think that is well said. So I wasn't gonna add necessarily anything to that, but I also kind of like the twist about how it's the radicals, you know, who uses his money for good, his rich dad, you know, is fighting back.
Right.
And that the whole plot is this, you know, there was one of the members of the Weather Underground, which was from a city next to the city that I lived in, was Glen Ellen, and their dad was like the founder of, like, I forget, not General Electric, but something huge, a huge corporation. And I think they rejected the money. I mean, we're going to talk about that in Catherine.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, she wants to completely disavow herself from that and does, and doesn't want to have anything to do with that, and is out there, you know, doing the Peace Corps or whatever. And then when they're doing revolutionary work and they want money to fund the revolution, and they're like, I'd said that when we were watching it. There's a line where he's like, we want it, he's got it, you know, let's take it.
Mm-hmm.
And just the, he was, and also just the thing, it just, it made me think about it more than the other times I had watched this movie. This was something that I thought about this time through, was Fritz Weaver's character, about, he's just kind of mad that, like, his kid didn't love him, really. I mean, because it's you know, you get radicalized, your parents train you to think, and then you think and you realize that your parents are a piece of shit, you know? Owns this corporation, and what did you do to get that wealth? What are you doing? How are you taking responsibility for what it's doing to the environment? So on and so forth. And I liked how they showed him in that country club. It was like this all-white country club kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, yeah, he's just this rich douche. And
bunch of old naked guys laying around.
Yeah, I think we see Fritz Weaver's butt. I think it was his butt, right?
I don't think it is. But,
oh, I thought it was.
But we definitely get, like, a couple, like,
it's somebody
rich white butts.
Rich white butts swinging by.
Which a lot of times, you know, certain directors, like, everything you see was on purpose. I'm wondering if that wasn't an accident. Which is another reason I would like commentary, and I always appreciate commentary, because you get things that you didn't necessarily see. Like, what were those buds doing? Well, let me tell you, that's quite a story.
All right, I'll start us off with rating if you want.
You don't have anything else?
I think I'm good.
I did a roundup. Victory did a roundup. You got nothing?
I started the roundup.
No, you didn't. You said nothing. You've said nothing this whole time.
That's right. That's fair.
Fine, just rate it. I'm going to look and see if I ever rated
this,
it.
This criticism I can handle.
I'm just giving you shit.
I know. I think I want to give this like an 8.5, maybe a 9.
Mm.
This is a thoroughly enjoyable movie. Good topic. Good callback to all sorts of important things. It's fun to get, like, to catch different comments or lines that you didn't hear before. And when he first starts hanging out with Shay, her line about, like, oh, I couldn't get into marriage because I figured out that monogamy was a patriarchal plot against women. I was like, oh, that's fun. 8.5.
Yeah. I think there's another line where he's like upset about what happened to Lila or something, and he meets the woman who ended up playing Frida Kahlo, who's with the Vasquez people. And he was like, how did you know her? Oh, because he thinks that she's responsible in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, we were in a woman's group, and he scoffs or something. And he's like, what's the problem with that? And he didn't have a problem with the woman's group. He was connecting it to something else. But it was just funny that they also got that, you know, we knew each other from this radical woman's group. And he calls on them.
He does.
You know, he uses the Vasquez people. If they weren't there, he would have gotten fucking hitman. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a very bizarre scene. I wouldn't recommend if you're setting up hitmen to smoke some weed. It's interesting now. Be like, well, if it doesn't happen, this is the way I want to go out. Playing my Clue and just listening to my Vivaldi and smoking some weed.
Also, Vivaldi? What's up, Frasier? Fucking nerd?
Yeah, I would maybe change that scene. Because think about it now, he's also a dad. And maybe don't put yourself in that dangerous of a situation. We get to see how he's pissed off that his children are put in danger.
Yeah, that was cool.
But to just have this setup, and it happens instantaneously. The magic of filmmaking. I'm sorry, I had rated this movie an 8, but lots of times when I look back and see what the rating of the movie is, I'll raise it sometimes, and it only gets a 6.4. So I was like, because I remember when we were reviewing, I think it was MMA or something.
Oh yeah,
it gets such a low review because of racism or whatever, that I was like, well, I have to give this a 10. I think I was going to give it a 9, and I was like, I'm going to give it a 10 because the rating it's at right now is criminal.
Yeah, I'm going to say a thumbs up.
Well, folks, let us know what you thought of The Big Fix.
And us. Tell us to stop podcasting. I think you should just not do this.
Yeah, and if that's your opinion, please send us a fat check so that we can do this in the
to do something else.
Yeah, we'll just fuck off and do something else.
And if you like us, send us a fat check so we can keep doing it too.
Or suggest a movie that you'd like us to watch or review. You can always reach out to us on the Instagram or the Facebook by looking up A Decade Under the Influence. You can also find us on Mastodon. We are there on mastodon.social. Of course, you can always leave us ratings and reviews on the different sites out there. Apple or Spotify would be the most preferable one that you'd leave us a rating or review.
Yes, please leave us a review.
That makes up the bulk.
Or reach out to us on Facebook or Instagram.
Yeah. And I think with that, we're out, right?
I'm already out.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody, and have a good night.